Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. That's right. I am currently undergoing my maintenance of radio health evangelism. I have completed Module 5, my self-assessment module, and I'll be taking the test in Atlanta later on this fall to retain my certification as a radio health evangelist.
What does that require? Just a test?
Well, no. It's a continuous, ongoing proof of intellectual superiority. It is, Rick, it's way beyond your meager abilities to understand.
So 600 shows doesn't count for anything?
No. I mean, let's face it. If you just show up, I mean, you've got to do the self-assessment module. You've got to do a knowledge, proof of knowledge, and get all sorts of highfalutin stuff.
And then I can't just be your friend?
Sure, you can do that, but there's no maintenance of certification for friendship.
You can't certify me?
Watch out, because you can be certifiable, yes, indeed. But speaking of certifiable, from the University of Kentucky, my friend, my certified friend, and the manager of communications infrastructure at the University of Kentucky, to explain to you our communications infrastructure, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know, you can get the audio of the show at WMKY.org. That's right, WMKY.org. What on earth is that, you ask? Well, let me tell you. That's the Moorhead State Public Radio website. There you will find everything you need to know about Moorhead State Public Radio. And buried in those menus, do a little search. You'll find a Health Matters. Go to our page. There will be a listing of our most recent shows. No, there's not room. Even though it is the World Wide Web, there is not enough room for all 600 plus of our shows. So we only keep the most recent shows up there. Read a little summary, listen to the show, sign up for the podcast. You can also find the podcast on iTunes. Just do a search for Health Matters, and don't be fooled. Look for the 60-minute Health Matters, not these little 3-minute, 6-minute. Don't fall for that. Go for the full-blown 60-minute Health Matters on your podcast. After you're done listening to the show, jump over to Facebook. Do a search for Health Matters Radio Show. You can do facebook.com/HM Radio Show. Either of those will get you to the Health Matters fan page, or the, we would say, if you like that page, then you will get regular updates. You'll see little pieces of research from time to time, little messages, little tidbits of information that come across our desks that warrant going up. Maybe it's just for a laugh. Maybe it's something you really need to know. You'll never know if you don't go to facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor, and by the way, this is the 10.5th annual Fall Spectacular. Sometime around 10 or 11 years ago, we started doing an annual Fall Spectacular in the fall, and we don't know exactly when, and so we just averaged them and got the 10.5th annual following last year, which was the 9.5th.
How come it's not annual? The 10-point-something annual? Because we don't know.
We don't know, but it's either 10 or 11. We're pretty sure of that.
Really?
Yeah.
We sure? Couldn't it be 12 or 13?
It could, but best I can tell.
600 shows, 52 a year.
That's a lot of shows.
Couldn't it be 12, maybe 13?
I don't think so, because that'd go all the way back to our first year, and we weren't very organized.
So you don't think 9.75 or 11.25?
10.5. I'm sticking with 10.5 because I actually have a mathematical reason to have the 10.5 show. Our sponsor, as with all of the fall shows, is Shoes with Tread. Staying out of the nursing home, you've talked the talk. Now walk the walk. Let's talk about the type of foot gear that you should be wearing to avoid falls. And you know, Rick, I've been an observer of humanity for most of my life.
What?
I have. I look at people and I
observer?
Try to figure out. Yeah, I try to figure out how what they do turns into who they are. And you know, we talked a lot about not losing visual contact with your feet. That's a pretty important thing.
Right.
One thing I've noticed, especially this during the warmer weather early this fall, is that people who have lost visual contact with their feet tend to really like flip-flops, or they call them thongs.
Okay.
Because, you know, if you can't
but
see your
Crocs,
feet.
But not Crocs, right?
Yeah. Well, if you can't see your feet, you want something you can just slide your foot into. And I think the thongs have that post there right between your big toe and your second toe, and so you know when the shoe's on.
You seem to be pretty familiar with those.
Well, because I've been looking.
Really? You don't wear them? Secretly?
I have not worn flip-flops, that's what I call them. I'm an old man. I have not worn flip-flops since I was in high school.
I really, the thought of you in a thong pair of thongs would just not be something I'd want to think about.
I know, and that's one of the many reasons I call them flip-flops. The other thing
have you ever run into people who call them thongs?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrible.
And I think it's stupid.
Yeah.
But then you've heard this story, most people I've talked to have heard this story. I wore them in high school. I got involved in a pickup basketball game, ripped my toenail off, and I said, you know, that was a stupid thing to do, and I need to prepare myself to play basketball at any moment.
Did you win?
Because you never know when a break. Well, obviously, I had to leave the court after that.
Really? That little flesh wound caused you to have to leave?
Ripped my toenail off, and when you're in high school, that's really traumatic. You think, will my toe ever be the same again?
I don't know.
All right, so let's talk about the ideal foot gear, and it certainly is not flip-flops, or if you are a sophisticated young urbanite, then thongs, if that's what you want to call them.
No, I don't want to. I just want to make you uncomfortable.
There was a survey of footwear published. This was, we've been repeating this for a couple of years, 128 community-dwelling people, 60 men, 68 women, over age 65. The majority of them wore slippers in their homes. 32% of women, 28% of men usually walked barefoot or wore socks. All of this is a bad, bad, bad idea. 61% of falls occurred outdoors with shoes with heels that were greater than 2.5 centimeters. The greater than 2.5 centimeter, basically greater than 1-inch heels, doubles your risk of falls compared with athletic shoes. Walking barefoot increases your risk of falls or walking in socks by up to 11 times compared with shoes. Shoes are very handy to avoid falls. The best type of food, best type of shoe. I don't know why I said food. I did.
Are you hungry?
I must be. It is around dinner time. I guess my mind has been wandering. But the best type of shoe to prevent falls, first of all, it should be a low heel. Secondly, the heels that are beveled, that is, they're not a sharp edge, right angle heel, seem to do better. High collars, that is, high backs to the shoe, not those low shoes that you slide your foot into. And for men, anyway, a more rigid sole rather than a running shoe seems to be better. For women, no difference. I would be very happy. I'm not too worried about the rigid sole. If, in fact, you have a shoe that supports your foot, a shoe that you have to lace up to or to Velcro up to make sure that it fits tightly, a shoe that does not have a high heel, and a shoe that does not have a leather sole, which is pretty darn slick, those are the best shoes to avoid falls, in my opinion. And certainly flip-flops are not a good idea, and certainly slip-on shoes. You need to be able to anchor that shoe. If it has a little loop and you can pull it up and it's snug, that's one thing. But if you just slide your foot into it, your foot can slide right back out.
See, Tony, I almost completely agree with you. Almost. Up until about two and a half years ago, I would have completely agreed with you. And if we'd have talked about this last fall, you'd have known I've kind of moved away from your little wagon train.
Rick is a lover of Crocs.
I love Crocs. And somebody turned me onto a pair of Crocs, and I thought, they're like flip-flops. They don't have, you know, they cover your toe, but they're very much a plastic shoe. And you look at them, and you think, man, how could those be? But they are the most comfortable shoe I think I've ever worn. Well, no, I don't have to think. I know. They are, in fact, the most comfortable shoe. But the weird thing is because of the way the rubber is on it, they tend to adhere to your foot, and so they don't flop like a flip-flop, right? They don't. They tend to stay connected to your feet. Now, they have a loop on them. I don't ever wear the loop.
I know. There's a loop in the back, which would satisfy.
Well, but you flip the loop up in the front, and then you don't have to have it messed around on the back.
And you slide your foot in. You're thinking that the coefficient of friction on the sole of that Croc is going to hold your foot in better than, or at least as well, or roughly as well as lacing or a back collar.
I liken it to a truck. So I usually run my Crocs in two-wheel drive. And okay, there are occasions where I know I need to put them in four-wheel drive. And that's when I go ahead and engage them on the backs of my heels and get them locked into
place.
You
drop that strap.
I drop that strap and drop them into four-wheel drive. And that is the way my Crocs operate.
Now, you know, a couple of things. First of all, some research I've read and don't have them for this show, but says that you actually walk different with the thongs or the flip-flops. You curl your toes to grab the shoe to keep it from sliding. So, in fact, it induces some changes in the musculature in the way you walk, which is not necessarily a good thing. The other thing that we all know, Crocs are not a good thing on escalators. That rubber can get caught in the teeth of the escalator at the top. You have to basically leap over.
Yeah, but see, that must be true for little people. My Crocs are huge. They're small boats.
You think you can surf right over?
They're small boats. They don't get caught in anything.
Yeah, I don't know. You may be right, the smaller kids, but if you do have someone in Crocs, realize that escalators and Crocs don't go very well together. That is our sponsor, Shoes with Tread, reminding you, avoiding the nursing home, you've talked the talk, now walk the walk. Now, again, this is the fall spectacular, so Rick, we can't just talk about falls. We also have to talk about fall.
Spectacular falls.
Yeah, well... Seeing a few of those on YouTube, but let's stay focused here. This was kind of interesting. The idea, of course, it's been beautiful. We've had a horrendous amount of rainfall in South Carolina, North Carolina last week. This week has been absolutely gorgeous in our area. Beautiful weather, and we're starting to see some changes in the leaf. This is from Howard Neufeld.
But Tony, before you get too deep, how depressing is it to live in a place like Morehead that is so beautiful in the fall? The trees literally explode with colors, and the leaves are just going nuts with colors. And then for the last two or three years, right before that happens, we get these massive amounts of rain and wind, and then by the time the leaves just come right off the trees.
It's going to get worse.
And it's just bad. It's like we've missed out on the fall explosion of color.
This is Howard Neufeld of Appalachian State University, Boone, North Carolina. He says, warmer falls, climate change, is going to reduce the intensity of the red colors, the sugar maples, especially in the Northeast U.S. So some of those famous Vermont, New Hampshire falls, those maples are not going to be as bright as they have been. It's all down to how much warmer it gets on these autumnal nights and how that affects the chemistry of the leaves. If the sugar levels drop, the red pigment drops in the fall. The other thing is, our falls warm up and as spring comes earlier, and it's pretty clear this is happening, then different tree species can change color at different times. This year, we had a pretty big change in our poplar trees, and they dropped their leaves already before the other leaves turn, so it may not be as synchronized as before. U.S. Forest Service reports 2/3 of the tree species in eastern United States are expanding their range to the north. They've already got proof of that, and that could hurt the tourist industry. In Kyoto, Japan, leaves on maples there are dropping on the ground before they turn red because the warmer temperatures are drying them out, and that could happen both here in eastern Kentucky and also for the aspens in the Rockies. And the other thing is, some trees apparently only spend a certain amount of time with leaves on them. So if you start spring earlier, no matter what the weather, you will start fall earlier for those. It's not necessarily universal. So what we're looking at then with warmer falls is probably less intense color, less synchronization of the different tree species, and some trees that are the mainstay of our colors moving north. It may be that some others move in, and so it's hard to predict. It could be, though, quite a bit worse in terms of color. Wildlife, also a problem. Nuts and berries. You know, we had our blackberries used to be toward the end of July, and we were now picking blackberries on the 4th of July, which I've never done in Morehead until the past year. So with those berries falling earlier, that means that a lot of the songbirds, some of the animal species that would store up nuts and berries for winter, they run out of nuts and berries. You don't seem to be worried about these nuts and berries. Well, I think,
Tony,
this is an issue here.
Do you really think we're qualified to talk about nuts and berries?
Okay, fair enough, but it's a fall show. We got to say something about it. The other thing is, if you have hot temperatures, pumpkin blooms don't open, and you don't get good pumpkin crops. In 2013, a hot summer
pumpkin pie is going to suffer this year?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Look at this. The brightest leaves may not be bright. Some of the squirrels, the animal species, may have trouble storing nuts for winter, and we may not have pumpkins come September and October. This is serious stuff. It's all about climate change. Maybe there will be adaptations. Maybe not.
Isn't it nice to know that some things just don't change, and we're always here?
We're always here, except when we take a break. And it is time to take a break. You've been listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio. Stay tuned for our second fractional portion.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the 10.5th annual Fall Spectacular.
Yeah, your number had me all messed up. I thought second 0.5 fractional portion show.
No, we know how many fractional portions. I just don't know when we started doing Fall Spectaculars. That's my problem. Our sponsor for the second time, the Shoes with Trib. Staying out of the nursing home, you've talked the talk, now walk the walk. And a fairly simple sponsor. Again, heel height and width influence a shoe's tendency to tip sideways on an uneven surface. If you've got high heels, that gives you more leverage. Those things can really just can hurl you into an ankle injury. If those are spike heels, you have no stability at all. And once again, I watch people wobble on high spike heels. Actually, every step they wobble. Now, maybe that's teaching them balance, but by the same token, it does increase risk of falls. High heel collars, that is the part that goes around your heel, the part of the shoe that goes around your heel, have been associated with improved balance, especially for women, especially for older women. It turns out that that helps stabilize your ankle and reduces the amount of wobble. So that's a nice thing. Men perform better with hard, thin-soled shoes rather than running shoes with soft soles. The problem with soft soles is you sort of lose touch, lose sensation of where your foot is with those soft soles. But with women, there were no differences. I myself wear running shoes. I'm not real sold on hard soles. I'm okay with them if you've got good tread, but unfortunately, a lot of hard sole shoes wind up having leather bottoms with no tread on them. And then the final thing is a beveled heel may actually do better than a right angle heel, and a shoe with a flared base to it may do better than a shoe with just a simple vertical base. Again, a wide shoe is what you're looking for, beveled heel, and good tread, non-slip surfaces. And it's an important thing. You know, Rick, I don't know if you've ever done this, but I've been at a like a public building that has that big towel on the floor, and it might be a air-conditioned building on a humid day where there's a little moisture condensation on the floor, but I can feel my feet sliding on those towels. Seen it in a couple of restaurants or hotel lobbies or places like that.
Like ceramic tile kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And it is very annoying. I wish at the shoe store, wouldn't it be nice if they had various surfaces that you could walk on and see how that works? They're all carpeted and you can't tell whether the shoe's got good coefficient of friction or not.
I have big feet. I'm just happy they have my size.
Fair enough.
You probably have those average feet, don't you? And they probably always have your shoe size.
That's an interesting... it's almost like you're condescending. If you're not a special shoe size, then what good are you?
Well, I'm just saying...
I resent that.
It's bad enough. It's hard enough for me to get the size of the shoe I want, much less test it on various surfaces.
It would be nice, though.
Oh, it would be nice.
Yeah.
What would be nice is if they basically listed out the surfaces on the box and told you what the what the drag coefficient was on it, or how slippery was it on this.
Yeah, you could have
and compare them from shoe to shoe.
Some kind of a slip system here.
Absolutely.
So, and if seriously, if you want a high heel shoe, that's fine. But the slip scores on
it's near zero.
Yeah, it is a 0.3 or something like that. Slip bug. Frictional score or something. I don't know. But
the pain factor is 0.9, 90%.
The slip and throw, basically. How far will this shoe throw you? And if it's a 3-inch heel, it will throw you a good distance.
Right.
One final thing on climate change and fall. Just mentioned, unfortunately, what this means is that the mosquitoes may be active after the migratory birds have already migrated. And if that's the case, guess who mosquitoes are coming after? They're coming after you. So we may see a problem with mosquito-borne illnesses later into the fall. We think of that as a summer problem, but if the birds are gone, the mosquitoes have nothing else to eat but us. Now, when we talk about falls as opposed to fall, in 2013, this was from the CDC, the direct cost for falls, what patients and insurance companies paid combined, total $34 billion. That is a chunk of change. That would fuel at least 1 week of all these political ads we've been seeing. Could actually save lives, pay for somebody's hepatitis medicines, things like that. As the U.S. population ages, the number of falls and the cost of falls will rise. Each year, millions of people 65 or older are treated in emergency rooms. I just think that's okay. That's not even a statistic, I don't think. But over 700,000 patients a year are hospitalized because of a fall injury. Among the 20 most expensive medical conditions, the average cost for a fall injury, $35,000. If you go in the hospital with a fall injury, you have probably broken something. It probably will need to be set, and you're probably going to spend around $35,000. Cost of treating fall injuries goes up as we get older because of the possibility of a rehab hospital. They say 1 in 3 adult over age 65 falls every year. Rick, did you fall last year?
I don't think so.
I did. I was thinking that. I fall. Yeah.
Trying to think. I don't think I fell.
I think I am about a once-a-year faller. First of all, I've got dogs, and I've got one dog that really likes to stay around my feet. She tripped me a couple years ago. And then the other thing is, every once in a while, I just stumble. I just, things happen.
Yeah, I don't think I did. Really don't think I did.
You're a good man. Three simple ways to help prevent falls among older patients. This was September 22nd. This was at that time, it was National Falls Prevention Awareness Day. We at Health Matters are not that fond of Awareness Day, but this was the first day of fall, so they did a fall prevention awareness day. First of all, they said screen patients by asking if they've fallen in the past year. And unlike Rick, many of them have. If they feel unsteady or if they worry about falling, that's an interesting thing, but worrying about falling indicates that you do have a higher risk of falling. I have, you may be aware, last winter, I slipped on some ice when it was extremely cold, and I broke my ankle. And that has changed the way I come downstairs. It's changed a lot of things. I'm a little more worried about slipping now than I used to be because I used to think I had great balance until until I fell and broke my ankle.
Kind of taught you a lesson there, didn't it?
It did. I am an humbled man. I have lost the arrogance of my youth. Number two, review patients' medications and stop, switch, or reduce the dose of drugs that increase the risk for falls. I will tell you, over age 65, I'm convinced that medications do a lot of damage in this regard. And keep in mind, if you break your hip, it's about as bad a prognosis over the next couple of years as having heart failure. So when you're taking all these medicines to keep your blood pressure very low for your heart, when you're taking medicines to help you sleep, when you're taking medicines for your depression, and you're taking medicines for behavioral problems and so forth, all those medicines increase your risk of falling. And then number three, recommend daily vitamin D with calcium. It appears in several studies that if you supplement vitamin D with calcium, we are not, at Health Matters, not that fond of individual chemical supplements anymore, but this one has at least enough science to continue to recommend it. Vitamin D with calcium seems to lower the rate of falling in senior citizens. Now, they mentioned about stopping medications, and Rick, you will like this because I'm going to give you a practical way to stop medications.
Okay.
All right. This is something called sleep restriction. I read this guy named John Ebert in something called Internal Medicine News. First of all, he says these are one of the problems with falls is people on sleeping medicines. And insomnia affects nearly half U.S. adults. Many of us are on sleeping pills. We've been told by our TV sets and our computers to ask our doctor about sleeping pills. Things like Ambien, Sonata, Lunesta, those type of drugs. Tolerance does develop if you take them over a long period of time. You have to take higher doses. You have more side effects. That includes balance problems and also sleepiness. Now, as an alternative, we have something called cognitive behavioral therapy. But that's really, that's counseling, essentially, on how to relax, on how to improve your sleep hygiene and things like that. It's hard to do. It's not something that a rural person would just walk into the doctor and say, I need cognitive behavioral therapy. So there is an alternative, and this was by Karen Falloon at the University of Auckland, New Zealand, and published in the British Journal of General Practice in August, called Sleep Restriction, and they try to consolidate fragmented sleep. You're going to love this, Rick. You really are. They had 97 patients in this study. They all got sleep hygiene advice. Avoid caffeine. Everybody does that. If you're trying to get to sleep, develop a consistent bedtime routine. Do you have a consistent bedtime routine?
You know, you'd have to define consistent. I mean, are we talking about all the time or most of the time? Because weekends are different than weeknights. I have a consistent routine through the weeknights.
Okay.
And there are occasional, our jobs both occasionally throw us curveballs, and there are nights that are inconsistent with our consistent patterns. But for the most part, I'm fairly consistent. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, when you get your body itself somewhat works and learns a consistent pattern, and you know, if some people, I know people who just naturally get tired at 10 o'clock at night, and then some people get naturally tired at 11:30.
My wife, it's a switch. She lays her head on the pillow. Boom, gone.
Yeah, I'm like
that. Gets up at 5:30 in the morning.
I'm like that. I can lay down within 8 or 10 seconds, be asleep.
I cannot. That does not work for me. Back to the study.
You should work harder.
97 patients. Consistent sleep hygiene advice, avoiding caffeine, developed their bedtime routine. Now, the intervention arm, they had a sleep prescription. They established the bedtime and wake-up times. They did a baseline two-week sleep diary. And Rick, this is where your watch could come in handy, right? Because you know what time you go to bed, and you know what time you fall asleep.
Biometrics will detect when I am asleep, yes.
All right. Their sleep prescription was their total sleep time plus half of their total time spent awake in bed. So again, if you spent 6 hours of sleep and you spent an hour rolling around the bed, they would tell you to spend 6.5 hours in the bed.
Okay.
Drop off half of your awake time off. And you take that off the bedtime end. The wake-up time stays consistent. Minimum time in bed was 5 hours. And they're not going to shave that. So if you are sleeping 2 hours a night and rolling around for four, you can't be a part of this study.
Right.
All right. 2 weeks later, you're still monitoring your sleep. They come back and they said, if you're sleeping less than 85% of the time you spend in bed, then you drop drop down to the sleep time plus 30 minutes.
Sleep time plus 30 minutes.
Yep. So you need to know when you go to bed. You need to know when you go to sleep. Rick has that information readily available to him, and you either use half your wake time or you shave it down to sleep time plus 30 minutes, and 30 minutes is your wake time. And they found, again, keeping the wake-up time constant, at 6 months, those people had better perceived sleep quality and fatigue, improved sleep efficiency. Two-thirds of them responded, but 41% of the controls did as well. Sleep is a tough thing to measure.
Yeah, I know, because my Microsoft Band, all it tells me routinely is I have low sleep restoration. So, you know, I don't sleep enough for it to be restorative. But then in the same breath, the stupid thing tells me that I'm a really good sleeper. I'm very efficient in how I sleep. I usually never, by its calculation, I'm not sure how it measures deep sleep versus light sleep and wake-up events and stuff like that, but based on its calculation, I am rarely under 97% or 96% in my efficiency for sleep.
Now, that means that when you go to bed, you will be asleep 97% of the time until you wake up. That's the efficiency?
I think it is. I think it's there's very few wake-up events, and I think there's some correlation to deep sleep, you know, versus light sleep.
Well, you know, this is the first time I've seen an actual clinical trial of advice that seems to me that would be very compatible with your band. That is, you have to know when you go to bed and when you actually fall asleep.
Right.
And you can't really estimate that stuff. And see, if they gave me that assignment, I would watch the clock to see whether or not I'm asleep or not. And the act of watching the clock is going to really mess me up.
Yeah, and this one, it's pretty cool because, I mean, if I forget, like, you can tell it I'm going to sleep. And really, all the purpose that serves is, I think at that point it stops, because my band also texts me. It also vibrates when I get a text. It vibrates when I get email. I mean, you know, so there's certain events that you can monitor, and it really is kind of an extension of my phone. So I don't necessarily have to, I can be in a meeting. I don't necessarily have to have my phone sitting next to me, and I can see what's happening in my electronic life through that. So I think it turns all that off so that you're not bothered by that while you're sleeping. Now, once it detects you're asleep, then I guess it shuts it down too, because I've never really been woken up in the middle of the night because I got emails, and believe me, I get a lot of emails in the middle of the night. So I think it has something to do with that, but it's pretty interesting. And just the biometrics alone, it can tell based on GPS movements, accelerometer movements, and actual heart rate and skin temperature when you actually go to sleep.
Well, this might be, again, you put those biometric data into this, it might help you to actually chart out your sleep efficiency and your the amount of time you spend in bed awake. And again, what they do, they take half the, when you start from your baseline diary, then they take half that amount of awake time, and whatever that is, plus your sleep time, that's when you're supposed to go to bed, getting up at the same time. So
they say go to bed a little bit earlier, and that way...
Well, they say, actually, if you took half your awake time plus your sleep time, you go to bed later. Then, because you would say, look, you're not going to go to sleep this time of night anyway if you have a consistent bedtime, because you always roll around in the bed if you do. So I can see now how you could use this information plus your band, and you could actually prescribe yourself a treatment for insomnia, which is pretty interesting, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I'm curious to see how the bands are going to go. I mean, at some point, you're going to get an insurance discount for wearing one and sharing your data. I mean, there's going to be some interesting things that this does, and it has been interesting. You know, the whole idea of calorie burn versus steps walked, and you know, or calories consumed versus calories burned. You know, heart rate. It's pretty interesting.
We believe that these bands, if we have the right peripherals, if you have the right interfaces, could be an important part of health in the future, monitoring everything from blood pressure to blood sugar to, it turns out, quality and quantity of sleep. This is old. Well, we apologize for it being old. It's about 10 years old. I mean, sorry, about 5 years old.
It's not near as old as this show.
But it does relate to falls. We've talked about how to sleep naturally so you don't have to take sleeping pills. But what about those pets? 87,000 American humans wind up in emergency rooms with injuries from falls caused by domestic pets every year. That's about cat and dog falls, 1% of all fall-related injuries in emergency departments in 2006, and that's about 10 years old, actually. They were using a national electronic injury surveillance system, all-injury program. ERs report diagnosis into this, and so they're able to look at that and see why people are showing up in the emergency room. Dogs, 90% of the time.
Wow.
Does that surprise you? Cats, I mean, let's face it, cats are not going to be underfoot.
Nope.
Cats are not going to be anywhere around.
Right.
Yeah.
Although, you know, my outdoor cat is so happy to see us when we get home. She runs up and lays down right in front of you when you're walking. So I'm surprised we haven't tripped over her.
Injuries 12.9 times higher among children up to age 14 and 10.5 times higher among older adults, 65 to 74, if you have dogs. Hospitalization rates similar with dogs and cats. So dogs make you fall. As you said, cats put you in the emergency room relatively more often. Females twice as likely as males to be injured in a pet-related fall. My wife feeds feeds the dogs, and so she would probably.
Do we really have to explain that statistic? That's pretty obvious, isn't
it? There are a lot of reasons, yeah. Injuries most frequent, again, among the children and the adults ages 35 to 54 had the most frequent injury problems. Most common injuries, fractures, one-third of the time. Contusions or abrasions, 26% of the time. Individuals age 75 and older had the highest rates of fracture. Their recommendation, prevention strategies, increase public awareness of pets as fall hazards and situations that can lead to fall injuries. Reinforce recommendations. The American Veterinary Medical Association recommendations emphasizing obedience training for dogs. And we at Health Matters cannot emphasize this enough. It may very well save your hip. It may very well save your life. Get that dog obedience training, particularly, and this is my experience with my mother-in-law. If you are an older U.S. American, you spoil your dog rotten. I feel that older people who have dogs need to get obedience training. If you're younger, if you can spend time with the dog, you can train the dog yourself. That's one thing. But if you are a busy middle-aged person, or if you are an older person of any stripe, you will spoil that dog. That dog will get under your feet. That dog will injure you. And so obedience training is a good thing to do. We don't obedience train our dogs.
Neither do I.
And our dogs do not obey.
Neither do ours. And ours hang around cats, so they're even worse.
Yeah, about the only good thing is
they learn the bad habits.
Lots of space at our house, and we don't allow them up on the porch, so at least we don't trip over them on the porch.
But, yours don't come. You know, yours don't come in the house, right?
They do not. We do not allow dogs in the house.
See, we have a little Yorkie, and he's allowed. He's in the house, and so
I don't think you would trip over. You could squash a Yorkie.
I worry more about hurting him than I do me.
Yeah, well, he might make you stumble and come out of your Crocs.
Maybe, but he hasn't.
Down.
Well, when I'm at home, I don't wear shoes. Sorry. I'm sure that's not
Well, I guess we're going to have to repeat the first fractional portion again.
Yeah,
because apparently you didn't hear this.
No, I heard it. I just ignored it.
Yeah.
So I'm the reason you talk about
this. Here's
the
thing. You're going to make me fail the self-assessment module of my radio health evangelism because obviously I'm not doing a very good job here in the studio.
Oh, I heard you.
You just don't believe it.
I believe you.
You just don't do it. Let's take a break while Rick and I straighten a few things out. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio. Please stay tuned. We may actually be back.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion. I'm Rick Phillips.
Fractional portion of what? You always say of Health Matters.
I'm just letting you do that.
I appreciate that.
You were correcting me throughout the break. I'm going to let you get your little words in.
And I am shoeless Tony Weaver.
Mr. Health Evangelist.
Well, just saying, honestly, we've got Barefoot Rick and Shoeless Tony here.
Well,
this is the 10.5th annual Fall Spectacular. Could be the 10th, could be the 11th. We're not sure. 10.5 seems like a nice compromise. Our sponsor for the final time, Shoes with Ted, reminding you, staying out of the nursing home, you've talked the talk, now walk the walk. Use common sense. Wear shoes around the house. The problem with shoes that slip on is that they slip off. Unless you lock them down, unless you're in four-wheel drive, there is a possibility of them slipping off.
You're going to remember that the rest of your life. You're going to remember putting your shoes in four-wheel drive. you will remember that.
But at any rate, the slippers that older people commonly wear are not necessarily good shoes. You really need. And, you know, Rick, what
do you
have
a good pair of house slippers?
I actually do.
Are they fluffy on the top, or are they slip in? I mean, they traditional?
Slip your foot in them. I did insist because every once in a while I have to go out for something. They do have decent soles, and they have tread on them. But you're right. They slide in and out. They don't have a back brace on the heel.
So, no, you're about to fail your own health evangelism course.
I don't wear those around. I only wear those out
in the snow in them.
No.
Watch this, folks.
Yeah, no, I don't wear them when
retraction?
I have anything else to do. The only time I wear them is basically when I'm reading before bedtime.
Or going outside to scrape the car.
Something happens. You know how that does. You hear something or there's a light you left on or something like that. But at any rate, I wear shoes a lot, and I do not go barefoot except in the shower, in the bed, and at the doctor's office. Those are the only three places to go barefoot. Swimming pool, I'll give you number four. At any rate.
Ocean. We can come up with a bunch of them.
We can, but your front yard, your basement, your house, not one of the places you should go barefoot. And I did have a patient come in, and we took his shoes off. He was diabetic, and he had a piece of crockware embedded in his foot. He had no idea. He was an older man. This was how we found out he had nerve damage to his foot, was he was walking around with some cookware embedded into his foot.
Wow.
So he remembers now that they dropped a dish and it shattered, but he did not realize that it was stuck there. So these type of things come up. You really need to protect your feet. Bad things can happen. Reminding you again, the ideal shoes. The ideal shoes include wide soles with good tread, beveled heels, because that allows you to rock that shoe forward and maintain balance. You know, every once in a while, you'll put your foot out and it will slide out from under you going forward. Beveled heels help with that. High heels, obviously a very bad idea.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you know?
Well, because of this research.
You've never worn any?
Wearing high heels more than 2.5 centimeters doubles your risk of falls.
Don't tell us whether you've worn them or not. I think we want you to keep your health evangelism title.
I have worn high heels back when I was in school. Back in the disco era, I did have blue suede high heel shoes. Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed the thing to do at the time. I have since
retired
those blue shoes.
What was Frances thinking?
Well, she didn't know me at that time. I was a little more grown up when I met her. But back to this, low heels, good tread. A beveled heel is good. A high collar around the heel, giving yourself not only support from the heel so you don't slide out, but also some ankle support. Ideal shoes. And these have been proven, these interventions, these changes in your shoes have been proven to lower your risk of falling, which is what we're all after anyway. That's our sponsor, Shoes with Tread. Staying out of the nursing home, you've talked the talk. Now walk the walk. Next up, and this, you will like this, Rick, because we're gonna just kind of take the theme and we're going to vary things a little bit. This is medically attended. That is, you came to an emergency room or some type of medical attention due to a tree stand fall. And this is among Wisconsin deer hunters. It was published in the journal Injury, actually accepted in September, and I think it's in an upcoming issues when it's going to be formally published. They looked at five hunting seasons from 2009 to 2013 and looked at falls out of tree stands. Any given year in Wisconsin, there were around 16 to 17,000 deer hunters. They had 39 confirmed medically attended tree stand fall injuries during that period of time. Not many.
But enough for an ICD-10 code.
Yep. Falling out of a tree stand is a pretty big deal. 92% of them male. I assume if you got 39 and 92% are male, you had one or two females fell out of a tree stand.
Yeah.
A little embarrassing there for the women, because this is falling out of a tree stand is a male thing. That's a male injury.
Right.
The women got no business falling out of tree stands.
Right.
They are not. Only guys are stupid enough to do this.
Right.
I think we need to check. We should probably do some DNA testing on this. I don't think that's so. I just can't see it.
Yeah, this is the case where number correlation doesn't jive.
39 injuries, 2 fatalities, 1 paralysis case.
That's not good.
Well, these stands are 20, 30 feet up.
Yeah, they're way up in the air.
Yeah, yeah. And again, you fall out. They had only, they actually had, let me see. Where did I see it?
Uh-oh. He's got to look. Hold on. Yeah. Hear the papers ruffling.
Yeah. Well, it's sitting right here. At any rate.
Would you like a computer?
No. The risk was dropping from 6.0 to per 10,000 hunters down to 3.6 per 10,000 hunters. This was interesting, I thought. Most falls occurred among archery hunters, bow and arrow guys.
Really?
I think they spend more time in the tree stand.
Yeah, you're probably right. They have to. It's a little bit tougher for them. You got to be closer to the prey.
Most of them on coming down from the tree stand rather than coming up.
Well, it's probably awkward to carry all that.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that. I was surprised by that. The other thing is, a lot of people tumbled out of tree stands, especially homemade ones. Now those tree stands generally have harnesses, which is a little
you know what
safer.
The sad thing is, Tony, is we're more equipped to talk about high-heeled shoes than we are about tree stands.
And I'm not a tree stand guy.
And we're two guys.
Yeah, we've got some tree stands on our property. I haven't used them in a long time. I do not hunt deer.
What did you put tree stands up for?
I didn't. The previous owner did.
You just haven't climbed up there to take them down.
I haven't taken the tree stand. Why would you take a tree stand down? I mean, he put it up there. I just said, I'm not going to mess with that.
You getting a ladder? Can you get to it with a ladder?
They had rope ladders, and no, they were 20 feet up. I'm not really.
So now they're just sniper positions.
I think the snipers would have a great deal of difficulty after 20 years. I don't think that they're a safe sniper. This is what I was looking for. A blood alcohol test was available in 23% of fall patients, with only one having evidence of recent alcohol consumption. Again, these hunters, you always think of that. Gee, they must be drunk and falling out of trees. In fact, no. They didn't have a great number tested, but I would put it on the other hand, there was no indication to test the rest of them. Either they were not able to get their hands on the test, or in fact, it wasn't done. Structural failures noted in 18% of falls.
structure failures with the tree stands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't set your tree stand upright, or you buy a cheap tree stand, you get in trouble.
Or maybe you're oversized for your tree stand. That would create some structural failure.
So you're a big bow hunter trying to get
literally
a tree stand. Yep. And you get a problem. One environmental factor, ladder frost. It sounds like a... You know, it sounds like a disease. I've got ladder frost. But what it means is, obviously, if you got frost on those rungs, then they get a little bit more slippery.
And most of the time you're getting up there, it's probably dark.
Yeah.
So you can't really see well.
Yep. So
this is, why do people do this? It's fraught with peril.
To get a deer.
Okay.
I mean, it's fun.
Is it?
That'd be fun. Yeah. I mean, I like being out, so I know.
Yeah, but you'd use a camera. You wouldn't use a gun.
Nope. And apparently, I probably won't use a tree stand.
You got two of them. Come on.
I do have, but don't think they're in shape for sitting.
You've
anymore.
Got twice. Well, you got way more than twice as many as me. I got none.
You got no tree stands.
No.
You're sitting next to a national forest.
Right. It's no against the law to put them in there.
But you could put them on your property, which is what people do.
The trees on my property tend to fall down.
Yeah. We had one of the funny things is one of my tree stands is actually on the edge of the property. It looks out over a meadow that my neighbor has.
Right.
My neighbor put a no hunting sign facing the tree stand.
Right.
Just to let me know what his position was
right.
on the tree stand.
You should put up a sign on the edge of your property that says no accusing.
Saying, I could put a sign up, I wasn't hunting anyway. I'm just looking. I don't know. At any rate.
Keep your deer off out of my sights.
Yeah, and off my property, I guess. I don't know. Now, next up, and almost as fun, this was September 2015, the journal Injury, and it came out of Canada. Severe injuries secondary to falls while installing residential Christmas lights.
Yep, every year.
This is every year. Falls from varying heights continue to be common, potentially increasing. Here's something I didn't know. Within the U.S., the fall-associated mortality increased by 46% between 2002 and 2010. That is, our mortality rates from falls are actually going up.
Right.
The world is not safer. The world is more dangerous.
We're more active.
The incidents, the number of falls, increased by 23%. We are older, I think. That would be one
That's
thing.
Probably true, the boomer
and,
generation.
And we have a little bit less balance because apparently we stay inside all the time, and when we go out, we fall.
Right.
Canada, falls increased by 18%, and they surpassed motor vehicle collisions as the most common cause of injury requiring hospitalization in Canada.
Isn't that amazing?
It is.
Falling.
Who would go to Canada for that? I mean, honestly, I'm sorry to our listeners in Canada. I'm sure you're having a good time there, but you're falling a lot. And more than we here, we have good car wrecks. That's what we do.
Right.
But you apparently don't. You would rather fall down than have a car wreck. None of my business. All I'm saying.
Do you think it has anything to do with a colder climate, more snow, more slip?
Generally, worldwide, individuals who reside within colder climates, says this article, appear to be at greater risk of falls.
Hmm.
But in the U.S., there's no seasonal difference rates. So, yes, colder climate U.S. people fall more, but there's no difference between winter and summer in any one given place. Odd thing, but
well, yeah, it seems contradictory.
It does. I think the thing is, there are more falls as you go north, but they're at any one place. There's no change in the fall rates between July and December.
Hmm.
So I don't know. All patients admitted to a level one trauma center between 2002 and 2012, that's 10 years, with severe injuries, were reviewed, and they had 40 patients. 95% were male. There is a theme emerging here. The people who get the bad injuries, men.
Are not women.
Their mean age is 55 years. Two-thirds of them fell off a ladder. So here's the thing, women. If you are not satisfied with your husband and not really willing to take legal action to try to free yourself, buy your 55-year-old husband a ladder and suggest that the house would look really nice with some Christmas lights. Again, 95% male, 65% fell off a ladder, 30% fell off the roof.
Ouch.
I can see that. 1% fell on the ground and actually got a severe injury. I don't know how that works. Maybe they impaled themselves or something.
You ever fallen off the roof?
No. That's one thing I haven't. I actually haven't
fallen
off a ladder.
You don't put Christmas lights up, do you?
I don't put Christmas lights up. And after this article, I'm not going to. My brother was working on a barn roof, and we were painting it, and he slipped, and he slid off the barn roof.
Right.
Very impressive.
Right. Were you there to witness it?
Was, yes.
Did you laugh?
No.
Did you applaud or clap?
No, there was a plow actually parked beside the barn, and he came close to hitting the plow, which could have been put him in the study, I guess.
So you all laugh about it now?
Yep, we talk about it now.
Is this the one that got the tractor stuck in the tree?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. So you all have a lot to talk about.
He is a great guy. One fell off a railing of the 40. They had two-thirds of them had neurologic injuries, two-thirds of them had thoracic injuries, 43% spinal, and 40% extremities. The length of stay from these Christmas decoration injuries averaged 16 days in the hospital, and 12.5% of them transferred to a rehab facility. So these average age 55-year-old men are having some very serious Christmas decorating injuries, and once again, 5% mortality. And again, we got 40 patients, so I'm guessing that's a couple of them died.
Wow.
So tree stands, a dangerous place in terms of falls, and also Christmas decorations. And maybe it's because you're in a hurry. Maybe it's because the weather's not as good. You know, you're decorating. Maybe it's because it gets dark early, and so you're rushing to try to get those lights up before it gets too dark to see. For whatever reason, we are in the middle of the time for injuries. One final fall thing. Again, going a little bit farther away from falls. This is about falling TV sets, falling flat-screen TVs, severe fatal head and neck injuries in small children.
Falling off the wall?
Falling off those stands. You put them on top of a chest of drawers. You put them on top of some stand, and toddlers especially, and small children may be killed or severely injured. Data from 29 different studies published actually on September 29th. Falling TVs cause head and neck injuries, fractures. Toddlers climb up onto furniture to retrieve something like a toy, or if they bump into an unstable TV stand. A strong recommendation here, those flat screens, they'll fit just about anywhere, but that does not mean you should put them just about anywhere. Be sure and secure your flat screen, especially if there are small children in the house. It can, in fact, be deadly.
Yeah, that's incredible. And you know, the thing is you constantly see screens get bigger and thinner, which means the center of gravity on them is just weird. So they're tippy. And you know, I don't care how light you make them, something that's 65 inches diagonal with some level of plastic bezels and stands, they get pretty heavy.
Yeah.
And you know, the metal stands themselves I've found are extremely heavy. So if you for some reason manage to get it to tip, then the weight of the stand actually makes that worse.
Yeah, it gives it a little bit of leverage. Meanwhile, we need to get ourselves off the air, Rick.
We do? Are you sure? Do you really? We don't want to... Never mind, I'm just kidding. Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Hunter Reese and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song. And to you, our loyal radio fans, remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or just visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember this important safety information.
Health Matters may cause you to fall asleep without warning during daily activities, including talking, eating, and driving, which may result in accidents. Tell your doctor if you feel new or increased sleepiness while listening to Health Matters.
When listening to Health Matters, hallucinations may occur, or you may sometimes feel dizzy, nauseated, faint, or sweaty when you sit up or stand quickly.
Before listening to Health Matters, talk to your doctor if you feel sleepy during the day. Oh my gosh, I gotta call him. Tell your doctor if you drink alcohol or take other medications that make you drowsy, as these can increase the chance that Health Matters will make you fall asleep when you should be awake.
Some patients listening to Health Matters have reported problems such as gambling, compulsive eating, compulsive buying, increased sex drive. If you or your family members notice that you are developing unusual urges or behaviors, talk to your doctor.
These are not all the possible side effects of Health Matters. Tell your doctor if you have any side effect that bothers you, if you know what all your side effects are. Experts have pointed out that 20% of people listening to Health Matters should not be listening to the radio and should actually be under the care of a physician.
Whatever you do, do not take this stuff lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week as we explain what to do when your bottom number is higher than your top number on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.